Poetry Rocks, Tool 10, The Likening. And the likening's purpose is to expand your ability to use figurative language well in your own work and to practice creating metaphors by likening one thing to another. When you describe something by comparing it with something else in any way, you're employing figurative language. To me, this likening is magical. It heightens our senses and causes us to see the world or anything in it differently. Whether the poet is using a metaphor, simile, personification, hyperbole, metonymy, or some other form of comparison, it's so satisfying to hear one thing likened to another and experience in an aha flash the truth of it. Yes, this is like that. In that instant of recognition, we feel like we've known it all along. As poet Richard Wilbur puts it, odd that a thing is most itself when likened. Consider, for example, this metaphor by the 13th century mystic Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Somehow, when a strong emotion like anger or fear comes sweeping through me, thinking of myself as a guest house helps to keep it in perspective. Figurative language allows you to say in a few words, through a concrete comparison, something that would take many plodding abstract words to try to explain. The word metaphor comes from the Greek carry over, and it always expresses some kind of abstract, which we call the tenor, in terms of something that's concrete, which is called the vehicle. So if you've ever heard Linda Ronstadt sing, "Love is a rose," the rose is the vehicle for love, which is the tenor. So it actually, through that comparison, we can think about all the ways that love might be like a rose. And you may have heard Emily Dickinson's poem that starts off, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul." Even though she never actually says the word bird, that is the vehicle for her tenor, which is hope. Now, effective metaphors are true. And what I mean by that is that the two things being compared have to at least have some element in common. And the good ones are fresh and original, meaning that this common element is not so obvious that it's a given. We want that element of surprise to be in there. And a good resource for learning more about metaphor is at about.com. There's a wonderful guy named Richard Nordquist who gives some examples. And I have a link there if you want to check that out. There's a couple considerations when it comes to using figurative language. No cliches or dead metaphors allowed. In other words, if you've heard it before, and especially if you've heard it repeatedly, don't use it in your writing. And be aware, too, that a little figurative language goes a long way. If your poem were beef stew, think of figurative language as the bay leaf, not the potatoes or the beef. I've included a link to a wonderful poem by Barbara Crooker. It's actually called Poem on a Line by Anne Sexton. We are all writing God's poem. So notice how she leapfrogged off of Anne Sexton's poem to write this poem. And she has a lot of really gorgeous figurative language in there. She likens the color of the sky to the soft blue of a work shirt washed 1,000 times. And she likens redbud blossoms to gaudy scarves flung over bark's bare limbs. And she also uses a form of synesthesia, or mixing of sensory perceptions, by speaking of how the scent of phlox curls in the open window, as well as personification, where you attribute human qualities to something not human, in the words, "The moon spills its milk on the black tabletop for the 1,000th time. So what you're going to do is you're going to create a poem using figurative language by starting off with playing a metaphor game. And I've created a table for you to look at as an example, but you're going to have a column for some words that you can use as your tenors. So if you think about this, that's the abstract stuff like love or hope. And I have listed some for you if you want to choose mine, or you can pick your own. And then across the top of columns, I have all the five senses, a column for each of the five senses, and I also have one for movement. And what you'll do as you go through this chart, you're just going to look at each tenor that you pick, and you're going to see what might just come to your mind as you think about this. And I have an example for you from a poem that you could look up if you have Spinning Words into Gold about falling in love. And underneath sight, there's balloons. That's the first thing that came to mind for Emily Kern, who's the person who wrote this particular poem about falling in love. And when she thought about hearing, she came up with the sound of laughter going along with her teen love. And then smell and taste, it was bubble gum for both of them, which I can see how she would come to that. And I wouldn't have thought of that. It's a really cool thing. And then for touch, she has the word smooth. And for movement, she has jumping on the bed. And she ended up actually using all of those things when she created her poem. And I also have three tenors, surrender, reluctance, and triumph. And I have some examples there. And as I, you'll see if you're reading this, or maybe I've already said it, you don't have to put something down underneath every column. Maybe when you think about fear or you think about hope, a taste or a smell doesn't come to mind. And you can either just leave the column blank, or you can just write down anything. And then afterwards, ask yourself, is there anything here that actually could make a sort of surprising comparison and that would illustrate something about the tenor that I'm talking about? So once you've gone through this and come up with some comparisons, then pick a couple that you like and use them in a poem. And you can let your responses suggest the idea for the poem, or a lot of times what I'll do is I'll start with a poem that I know that I want to write, and I'll pick tenors that go with that subject, and I'll think through different figurative language that I could apply knowing that that's what I'm going to be writing about. So here's my example. Once I was dealing with some grief caused by the poor choices that somebody I loved was making, and I attended a memorial concert for a beloved choreographer, Salvatore Aiello, and the words of the conductor, the music, and the season, which was fall, all contributed metaphors that helped me to express all the complex thoughts and feelings that I was having. And it's called Everything That Happens. October's half over, and the leaves have not begun to surrender. Sugar maples hold silver green, ginkgos hide their gold, a fermata of warm nights, too much rain testing my belief in glorious endings, the word triumphant. Tonight, trumpets and timpani blaze for Salvatore Aiello, dead at 53. A fragile man, the conductor says, a courageous artist whose choreography enriched us all. I clap and clap for grand jetés and pirouettes, his dancers dancing on. Is this an end? Or proof of Rilke's words, do you not see how everything that happens keeps on being a beginning? But aren't there beginnings better left unbegun, griefs that happy endings won't redeem? If only at the plot's first vicious twist, I could skip ahead to the final pages, the way I did in childhood with every book I read. As long as I knew what was coming, I could stand the sadness this suspense. How to live with the day's news echoing like a chord unresolved, this waiting for the leaves to fall. And here's a little reflection for you. Aristotle thought that the mastery of metaphor was the mark of genius in a poet. List two or three ways you could develop your genius by getting better at metaphor. For example, you could try consciously weaving a few into your conversations each day. Any other ideas?